Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, roundtable freeform discussion about lore and our favorite media. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my stupendous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. We're here to answer your questions. So if you have questions for this or any of our other podcasts, be sure to send those in to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. You can go ahead and just specify what show it's for so that we know in the subject line. That'd be great. We also have our podcast channels on the Discord server. We have the Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel, where we tend to look first for questions as a way of saying thank you to our Patreon supporters for helping us keep the lights on. And then we have the one for everybody else, which is the Q and Podcast Questions channel. Again, we specify that you ask what podcast it is for. And as a matter of fact, pretty much every single one of these questions we're going to be talking about today comes from Discord. So thank you very, very much, everybody. Without further ado, first question comes from Metalzani. Greetings, Watchers. With all the rumblings about new land on the other side of Kalimdor, what do you personally want to see on these new lands? Is it where you finally get a Devilsar mount? Maybe I finally get to tame a Brutosaur. Or maybe just playable Tuskar and Vykrul who got lost. I just want to know what fun things you would love to find over there. And in parentheses, serious or joking. I think, seriously, Matt and I have been talking about doing that whole expansion where we go to somewhere where we've never been before. And yes, the Dragon Isles does qualify as that. But having something that's been completely removed or completely unheard of or just not seen, and having something new to experience is always super fun. I mean, again, Dragonflight did that. That's where we get the Drakthyr from. That's where, you know, we've got whole new stages of Tuskar and some other races that are just bandying about. As far as what I would like to see in a new land, I would like to see a land that is not touched by what happened to the rest of Azeroth. And I don't know if that makes sense, but let me see if I can and break it down a little bit. The majority of the lands that we go to and that we spend our time in have been ravaged by war, whether it is with us or other entities. It has been destroyed, rebuilt, flooded by Deathwing, burned by Deathwing, destroyed by Deathwing, elementals running a riot all along the place, some of it being caused by us trying to fix things and not doing such a great job. And heck, one of those lands even has a giant Titan sword jammed in the middle of it. There's a lot of things that have just been sort of like wear and tear on the places we call home. I mean, Stormwind's had to be rebuilt. Lordaeron is currently being rebuilt because, you know, it's been plagueified, then inhabited by the undead, then replagueified so that the undead couldn't even inhabit it, and now being cleared out so that, you know, it could be inhabited again by undead-ish things. The Forsaken, whatever they are now.
They're still undead, man.
Yeah, but they're not quite dead. They're not quite undead. No, they're not quite alive.
They're the undead, man. They're, you don't have to make this too complicated.
Fine.
You're overthinking the undead.
I never thought anybody would say that to me. But I want to see what a land like that looks like. In Avaloren, the one that we've been hearing about in the books and like that, it seems fascinating because, one, like on our side of the world, we kind of like the Titans and the Titan Watchers and things like that, we just kind of went along with what they did. There wasn't really like a big pushback from the mortal races against them. We just kind of accepted it. But Avaloren, they told the Titan Watchers to go F off. They didn't want to deal with Odin. They didn't want to deal with Tyr or any of the other ones. They were just like, we're out. We're done. We don't want to deal with you anymore. And even though they came from that same potential origin, where there are these races that were created from the Titan Watchers or the Titan Born, and then for whatever reason, like I think it's originally it's described as sort of like the land of misfits where they like basically send it as a penal colony, but it evolved into so much more. Like there's just nothing there. Like, at least nothing that the Titans would consider friendly. And I want to see what that looks like. I want to see what a land looks like where, for lack of a better term, like the Primalists want, where the Titans have no control over what happens there. So, I don't know. What do you think, Matt? What would you like to see in a new land or in something like that?
Well, I mean, at some point we're going to have a discussion about what you think is going on in Avaloren, because what you think and what I think are not even close.
Okay.
But I'm going to be doing Robin Scherbowski's TV show now. Anyway, wow, I've been watching a lot of stuff on TV this week. It's been an interesting week, guys. Basically what I want to see is I want to see a land where the entire place has been ravaged by war. There's at least three Titan swords driven into everything. Just complete chaos. No, I'm kidding. What I do, however, want is not dissimilar to what Joe's talking about, at least in terms of its, I guess, for lack of a better word, its motive. Because I want to see something where I don't hear about the old gods or the Titans or the Legion.
Every 10 seconds.
I want to go someplace where, imagine if you go someplace where you come upon a village and there's a bunch of trolls and humans there and they get along just fine. And they've not been trying to murder each other since they've met each other. They're in fact, you know, perfectly content to be there. And then you come to like a dwarven place where it's a bunch of dwarves and they're like, you know, strong drink. That would be ridiculous. No, we dedicate ourselves entirely to gardening. And you just cut to this enormous dwarf garden full of like, you know, giant freaking pumpkins. Like what's with the pumpkins? We just like pumpkins. Plus it's a theme on your podcast. And so just something completely, it takes the elements that we're familiar with. It takes the Warcraftian stuff that we've been playing with since this game started roughly almost 20 years ago, because it's 2023, guys. It's 19 years this year. And I'm not even talking about, you know, going back to Warcraft as a whole, like the original, you know, Warcraft Orcs versus Orcs and Humans game, which I think is 1994, but I don't remember off the top of my head. But we've had all these tropes and elements that are part of fantasy in general. They've come up through D&D. They've come up through other games. Warcraft has taken its spin on them. I would like to see someone take the now established Warcraft spin and fling that sucker up against the wall and bounce it in a different direction. So it's not just, you know, once again, the Legion or once again, the old gods. Like, imagine a place where monsters showed up and they had nothing to do with either the Legion or the old gods. We'd be like, what? It's just a bunch of monsters from somewhere else? Okay. I mean, we know what to do with monsters, but yeah, it's refreshing that they're not, you know, for one of the things we've talked about a lot on this show, and it's an interesting subject, is the cosmology of Warcraft, all these different planes. Imagine if you got to a place and there was a whole bunch of stuff from the arcane plane that was like a threat, and like, you know, the arcane, you know, the dread Desmonds of the arcanists. Like, what do you mean, like mages? No, they're actually living arcane. They're very bad. You just have to trust me. They're like just trying to turn everything crystal. It's just, ooh boy, you know, it'd be like a completely different thing. It's tied into the Warcraft universe, but in a way that we haven't seen or heard before, because it's not that I don't like any of these elements, But I want to go to a place like I keep going back to Warlords of Draenor. You remember Warlords of Draenor's opening, which was a pretty good opening, I thought.
It was a very good opening.
But when you get to the room where there's freaking Gul'dan trapped in a trap right in front of you,
mm-hmm.
and you're supposed to free him, I'm like, all I could think was, I have two giant axes in my hands. Why am I not chopping him up right now? What possible motivation could I have for not killing him? It's Gul'dan. We all know who that guy is. And it broke the expansion for me. It really did. I couldn't get past the fact that my character, it would have been one thing if my character had seen Gul'dan snapped and went, it's time to kill him. And that started the whole thing, because I thought that the good thing to do was to take an axe to Gul'dan, and that ended up being the wrong thing to do. But that wasn't what they did. I literally just freed him and watched him leave. And I've never gotten over that. I feel like, give me an expansion where if there's something like, if I walk into a room and I don't know if I can't think of anybody Gul'dan level here, but if I walk into a room and somebody that bad is just floating in front of me, I don't just walk over like a moron and push a button and let him out. Maybe we don't do that. Maybe we have an expansion where if I meet a bad guy, I don't know he's a bad guy.
Or maybe
what I'm saying?
Or maybe we have an expansion where like somebody actually calls us on the stupid stuff we do because they're not used to us just being the hero or the champion, and we get away with like some pretty bad decisions a lot of the times. Let's be honest.
Yeah, like, but that's not one of the things. One of the problems I have is that a lot of that bad decision juice isn't our fault. It's like sure. The Gul'dan thing. We don't get a choice. It's not like. I really feel like a ton of the stuff that people look at, point at and go, your character does a lot of dumb things. A lot of that stuff is either other people doing it and us just being there and just kind of going like, I guess I just let that happen then. Or it's literally like Gul'dan syndrome, where my character just ignores the fact that it's Gul'dan and lets him out. I feel like an expansion where we didn't get treated like idiots and therefore we didn't have to act like idiots. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of times where you have to kind of make the dumb decision. And they haven't done it, like, they don't do it every expansion. In fact, they haven't really done it in a while. Like, I can't think of anything off the top of my head where
we've been pretty good on that front.
Yeah, so I just would like an expansion where there's new stuff, not new stuff that doesn't have to be, like, literally, you know, you've never heard of them before, but they're called the Smurfs, you know, but although that would be a hilarious expansion. But you know what I'm saying? I'd want it to be a Warcraft thing, but I would love it if it was a Warcraft thing where it wasn't, you know, it's these bad guys again, doing this stuff again, and I'm forced to do the same kind of stuff again. I get you on the whole war is bad thing, by the way, Blizz, we got it. War is bad. And therefore people make morally bad decisions during it. But and I think they get this. I don't want to make it sound like I don't think they understand this, but I'm going to use this example because I think it's the most cogent to what we're talking about. If you are a Horde player, I think you'll understand where I'm going with this. If you play Horde, it's not cool that your decision to play Horde is often used to weaponize your character's faction to do dumb, awful things in the name of concepts like honor. Or whatever, because a lot of times I hope Battle for Azeroth is the last time this comes up, because when I first started my Horde character, I leveled as a Tauren, and I loved that character. I still to this day his name's Vornathar. He even got made into a character in the original TCG, the one with actual pen, like paper cards. He even existed, like he's out there still to this day. You can find him online. Vorn, Champion of Bane. I loved that guy. And it broke my heart when the pre-Battle for Azeroth storyline unrolled and I saw him. Like, I had to stop playing because I had no problem with Vorn fighting the Alliance. I had no problem with the Horde, you know, being a faction that, you know, went out there and did its own thing. That was never my problem. My problem was just the sheer, like, when I saw them burn Darnassus, that was just like, no, this is too far. This is just flat out war crime time. And it's not cool when you're the faction that has to constantly carry the water like that. You know, I used to think it meant like that the Horde was the favored faction, but I started thinking about it from the perspective of all these Horde players I knew. When I was doing Cataclysm in particular, I was playing Horde like full time Cataclysm. I didn't play Alliance throughout Cataclysm. I played like my Horde characters for like most of it. And then I went back and leveled Alliance through. And I'm like, all my friends in my raiding guild at the time were like, yeah, great. I got to listen to Garrosh again. It's just wonderful. And it wasn't that they didn't like the character, but it was like, what is happening here? Why are we constantly attacking everything? Like, what's that got to do with banding together and creating this, like, you know, this organization for underdogs? That's what the Horde was sold to them as in the original WoW.
Yeah, and I think I'm on that same train too, though, right? Like, I'm enjoying, in particular, like, Dragonflight, because there really isn't that faction warfare. It's not present because Alexstrasza, essentially, in her, invitation said, leave that stuff at the door. Like, yeah, that's not welcome here, right? And I enjoy that, like, even though that's the excuse, I'm enjoying that that's not the focus, right?
Mm-hmm, well, mm-hmm. But I also think it's cool that they actually put in, like, examples of Horde and Alliance characters deliberately trying to not do that.
Mm-hmm.
And not just because Alexstrasza said so, but because they've, like, you know, we have reached the end of this. This is not useful. And I really did like that. But continue.
No, I was going to say, like, but then it leads to interesting quest experiences and things like that, where I think it becomes more more about what's happening in the moment and less about decades-old conflict. Because the problem with decades-old conflict is it gets boring. And I'm not saying that is in, like, I never want to have, like, you know, the wars never should happen, whatever. We've done it. I just want to move past it. But it's, to me, the most interesting things are when you're in the moment, when you are experiencing what's happening and dealing with what's happening without any of the baggage. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, Legion, I enjoyed Legion. I had fun in Legion. Legion was still 10,000-year-old baggage.
It was 10,000-year-old baggage. But it was 10,000-year-old baggage that was having repercussions right now.
Versus
I think we're both on sync here, where it's one thing when that stuff comes up again, but you get to experience it in a new story.
Exactly.
Like, I think that's when we keep talking about Avaloran. One of the things we're interested in is, okay, so to go back to when I said I think we have a different viewpoint, we don't know who those people are. We have an inkling that there's a something dwarf-like group. They're descended from Earthen, same as the dwarves, but they're different. But they're over there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing we know for sure. Otherwise, we don't know who these people are, these heretics. We don't know what heresy they've committed. We don't know if they're Titanforged or not, because he doesn't say.
That's true. It could be another native race to Azeroth that already existed before the Titans got here.
Yeah, or it might not be. But we don't know. But what I like is there's a statement, you know, they're going to start fighting amongst each other. That's their nature. How do you know that? Like, we don't know why this person is saying this. Is this person saying this because they believe it? Or are they saying it to get Odin to back off because they know Odin won't back off? And if he doesn't, we might lose the old gods who we're currently keeping prisoner. And so I gotta get you focused in the right direction. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot.
A lot of it could have been handling of Odin, which is a thing, right?
And that's what gets me thinking about what were you just saying about Legion. Like, yes, it's tens of thousands of years old baggage, but it's having a repercussion right now. I don't want to see the same Horde Alliance fighting that I've been seeing forever, but I would welcome a story that dealt with Horde Alliance conflict in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
That was a new story. And we keep saying new, like that means it can't have any of the previous elements. That's not what we're saying.
No, we're saying that something that doesn't operate in the cyclical storytelling.
Imagine a story where we actually saw the combining of these two groups, the interplay of their relationships in a way that was still complicated and still dealt with them as individual peoples who have their own agenda. But wasn't, like, imagine if a very powerful orc warlord, she decided she'd met this human and they were going to get married. And so now this orc family had to deal with these humans and were like, you know, how can I possibly let my daughter marry a weak human? And the humans have to come in and say, look, we've been beating you in war for like 2 decades. We've got to have something. You know what I mean? Like, you could totally deal with the idea of these family dynamics and the dynamics of these two peoples who have been fighting for decades. And if it's time to lay down your arms, if it's time to make peace, how does that work for? And we always talk about the orc aggression, but humans are ridiculously aggressive in Warcraft.
Yep.
Humans have been barbaric fighters for centuries. Humans literally out barbarianed the orcs, not the orcs, the trolls. The elves came and enlisted humans, and the humans were more aggressive and warlike than the trolls, to the point where trolls had had, you know, big empires for centuries. Humans had never even managed to get out of hitting each other. Like, so there's a lot to this. There's a lot of stories you could tell. And going back to Avaloran, one of the reasons I want to see it is because I want to see not just something new, but something completely different built on the same franchise.
Yeah.
Where it's, you know, it's, I like Joe used to talk about a lot, the trolls and humans living together thing, which I always thought was a really cool idea. Imagine you go to a place and there's a bunch of really aggressive gnomes who are like just ridiculously warlike and fierce, and they're defending a bunch of pacifist, you know, dwarves and elves who don't even want to fight. But they've got these gnomes who are like, if you even try and touch them, you're going to answer to me. And you're like, literally, you're having to look, like, they have to get up on a box just to threaten your belly button. And you're like, this is going to turn out that you're all ridiculously good at war, right? This is how this trope works, isn't it? You're going to just blow everything up or something. How is, like, you, just the fact that you're like threatening me like this makes me feel incredibly uneasy, because it's a ridiculous thing to do. So you're like super good at fighting, aren't you? Like, just stuff like that. There's so much room for so many things we've never seen.
Yeah, and it's like, it's the idea of playing on like what the races are known for, and playing off of, like, not necessarily just saying the opposite of, but getting a chance to reinterpret or re-explore the dynamics that we've just kind of taken as this is what they are for the last, well, you know, 19 years, right?
The reason, these are tropes, and they're not bad tropes. But, I mean, you were talking about dinosaurs and stuff. We have seen Lost Lands full of dinosaurs and stuff in WoW already. Does that mean I never want another one? Oh, God, no. I want hundreds more of them. But if you do it, it should be done in a way that is a new take on it. One of the things I absolutely loved the idea of was, imagine going to a lost world of, like, you know, various prehistoric creatures, and they're all creatures from before. Like, because a lot of stuff seems to be, this is a Titan experiment. This is the Titan's Petri dish. What if you had a preserve that was literally all the stuff that was alive on Azeroth before the Elemental Lords started going nuts?
Yeah, what if it was the conservation thing? Because if I'm thinking about it, like with A&R and things like that, that's something I could see them trying to do. Like, we're modifying all this, but this part already existed before we got here. This is part of Azeroth. This is part of what was born from that, you know, whatever flesh shell. Again, that's a whole other topic for another story. But like, you know, we can't just erase all that. We should keep it for, you know, keep something safe for historical record.
Or even just because, you know, at their heart, one of the things we're seeing a lot lately is that, you know, the Titan keepers are up to some shady stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be nice. You see, yes, they are up to some shady stuff. Some of the stuff they do doesn't jibe with our approach to things or the way we want the universe to work, but they do still actually want to preserve things.
Yes.
And one of the things they want to preserve is stuff before because if you go back to before the Elemental Lords showed up, then you're literally going back to an Azeroth that had not been interfered with yet.
And also think about that too, right? Like, is this a land that is untouched by the Elemental Lords? Is this a land that is untouched by the old gods being hurtled to the Azeroth and landing on the Pangaea-style continent that may not have been the only continent? That's just all we've known. Like, you could play with a lot of that idea, too, because how much of the world that we exist in was shaped because of that? I mean, the sundering of the great continent would not have happened without the old gods or the Titans or any of that stuff. So that's the other thing I'm really interested in looking at, too, is, you know, is this a land that the old gods didn't touch? Is this a land that the elementals maybe knew about but didn't have any reason to go there or touch it because they were focusing elsewhere? Is that why Tharizdane and Neptulon didn't really care about the fighting? Because they're like, there's more land over there. We've been there. but I guess we're going to be over here now because we don't have a choice.
And there's like a lot of possibilities for like primeval Azeroth before the coming of everybody, mm-hmm. before the elemental lords, before the old gods, before the Titans. And it doesn't necessarily even have to be a preserve, although I think that would be great if it was. And maybe that's what these people who like are considered heretics by Odin are. Maybe they're the ones who said, no, this world is a Titan too. And whatever was here before us has the right to be here. It's their world. It's you know, you're short-sighted because you're looking at this from the perspective of the Titans that made you, but you live on a Titan and you need to start thinking about what it wants. And that was the big break, because Odin's the prime designate, but he's the prime designate appointed by Amon-Thul, not by Azeroth.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that these Titan Forged went, I don't want to say the word going native because that's, you know, pretty freaking racist nowadays. But they've gone and said, no, we're on a Titan. Its wishes are important. Like, this world's dreams and hopes and fears are important. This, it's a living being that's coming into itself. And we've disrupted that. We had reason we had to do that, but we have to respect it. And that would still be, that's totally in keeping with everything we've seen. It doesn't retcon anything,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it creates this new group, and this new group is completely focused on what's good for Azeroth, what Azeroth wants and needs. Like, maybe they're the ones who came up with the original idea of the Earth Mother that the Tauren later went with. Maybe they're the ones who gave that. Maybe before they broke away, they were the ones that first tried to explain to the Mogu. Okay, because keep in mind, the Mogu were a Titan-forged race that followed the Keepers, right?
Yeah.
Before they betrayed them. And imagine if, like, Ra'den, you know, Ra'den and our Master Ra, he was at least as powerful as Odin. And was, you know, he was the one going around in the south while Odin was basically just sitting up north doing nothing. Ra'den was the one going around the south creating the network that was necessary to sustain Azeroth. That whole area that fed back into the Well of Eternity to try and heal the wound created by Amon-Thul. Master Ra was the one doing it. And then suddenly he got captured and had his heart ripped out. And what if there were other followers of him? What if they're the ones who went off? Because they were like, okay, look, we have tried dealing with the Keepers the way that they seem to understand things, and it's wrong. And look what happened. Their people like rebelled and tore the heart out of Master Ra. And now, you know, we're done. We're not going to do this anymore. We're going to listen to the world. And that's the big divergence.
Yeah, and I mean, think about it too, because it starts giving things like Magni becomes prominent again, potentially, right? Because that's what Magni's trying to do. And what happens if Magni goes to that land and all of a sudden
meets up with these people? And
meets up with these people. You know, oh my God! Azeroth! Azeroth is speaking to us through the like. We knew that it was alive, but like we never thought about this.
Or imagine he shows up and there's somebody there going, ah, yes, another speaker. And they bring him to the, you know, they've got a speaker of their own. And he's like, mm-hmm. thank God they finally appointed another one, you know, and just there's so many different ways you can run with it. And yet you're not abandoning the older stories, but you're doing something new with it.
It's the idea of taking what you already know and has established and looking at it through a different lens. Mm-hmm. And I think mm-hmm. that is what's the most exciting and why like people like Matt and I keep going on about it, right?
Yeah, well, Dragonflight's been doing this.
It absolutely like has.
The whole bit we saw with Tyr, everything we now know about Aberus. Aberus. The whole thing with Aberus is that you're finding out something new that Naltharion was doing. It doesn't change anything we know he did. It just expands it. It just says, and this is part of, this is how he got there. This is the stuff he was doing to get him to the place he ends up. Yeah, so that's the kind of thing I'm thinking about. I do want to see Avaloran, and I can't remember the new place, Kaz something. I can never remember it, and I feel like a jerk because it's really important. The new place with the new dwarves that aren't dwarves. But I want to see that kind of stuff, and I want to see like Lost Lands and all that. But what I really want to do is stories that move forward, not just in terms of like new lore and stuff, but like just new characters getting to do stuff that takes the story forward.
This is one of the biggest complaints that I think whenever Matt and I talk about storytelling, especially with like fantasy storytelling, that I think we generally agree on is that stories that don't move forward feel, at least to me, and I don't want to speak for Matt, but to me they feel bad. And it's not just because I want something new or anything like that, but it's like when you're reading a book and it's rooted in like, oh, this tradition from 10,000 years ago and we're going to keep doing the same thing, it's like, then what's the point? Whereas like I'm reading right now, I'm going through the first book of the new trilogy from Brent Weeks with the Dark Angel trilogy. Now it's the Nemesis trilogy. And that's the whole point of the book is everything got shooken up at the end of the first trilogy. And now it's, how do you move forward? How does the world work now? And you don't shake off everything that happened before. You acknowledge it. You understand that it is a part of why you're doing what you do. But it's now being forced, in this case, like the main character is being forced to look at the world through a different angle and understand through different eyes what everything means. And that's way more intriguing to me. And so like something that forces our character perspective to shift is way more interesting to me. Because it doesn't have to erase everything that came before it. It's adding to it. It's moving the story forward. And that feels really good.
It really does depend on how you're talking about it, too. One of the reasons that I feel like World of Warcraft is in a place where it needs to do this is that we have gotten to the point where this is a very opportune moment for it.
Yes.
The end of Shadowlands is essentially the end to a kind of a worldview that has existed since the original Warcraft, where you finally just say, you know, this way of life isn't sustainable. And it makes sense that people keep trying to make it sustainable.
Oh yeah.
Because it's like, there's a certain fascination with, okay, what made this what it is? What is the strength of this story? What is the root of this story? But if you look at like, a lot of people would point to Warcraft 3 being the best and most popular RTS ever made. Not everybody, but a lot of people. More people would certainly argue that it is the most
genre-defining.
I want to say the most important. Genre-defining is not a bad one, though. The most important of the Warcraft games in terms of what it does to the Warcraft setting. It expands it out greatly. It introduces a whole new continent. Keep in mind that before Warcraft 3, the word Kalimdor never came out of anybody's mouth.
Correct.
And today it's one of the most important concepts in Warcraft, but before Warcraft 3, no one had ever heard of that place.
Mm-hmm.
So I want them to do that again in that they take the stuff that they already have and then they put a new place in play and expand on everything. Like, and I don't want it to be that Avaloran was the original supercontinent that Kalimdor broke off of, but it could be that Avaloran and other places like it were not ever part of Kalimdor. They were always like, maybe they were off on their own. And that insulated them from some of the stuff that happened. But it also meant that some of the stuff that happened happened and they had no way to confront it or stop it. They just had to do a holding action and they were trying to figure out what was going on. And by the time they did, it was over. Like, imagine that you're like the people of this place and suddenly one day you just get attacked by demons, continuous waves of demons always. And you're just fighting them off. And by the time you're like, okay, where is this coming from? How is this? There's this enormous tidal shift, this enormous wave comes and you basically have to do everything in your power just to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out the continent to the north that we came south from is gone. And they're like, what do you mean it's gone? And they go and they look and they just see the giant whirlpool. And they don't like scan the entire area and find every piece of land that used to be part of Kalimdor. They just assume that whole place is dead. The place they came from. Because, you know, like we're talking about the whole Avaloran thing. The heretics come from, you know, what is essentially Kalimdor. They come from the Titan Forged there. So they're like, you know, that means they're all dead. They're all gone. There's nothing up there now. And so they've been going together, going doing their stuff for the past 10,000 years or however long it's been. And they're like, one day we show up and they're like, what?
Where are you coming from?
There are people up there, you know, and you could imagine that story where, you know, these people have had their own stuff going on for countless millennia now, like at least 10,000 years, 10 millennia. They have been doing their own thing. They've evolved in completely different ways. You know, maybe there's some elves there and those elves are completely unlike any elves you've ever seen. Like they don't do any of the stuff the other elves do, but they're still elves. You know, like there is a lot of room.
Well, I mean, but also begs the question too, right? Because are there elves? Because
yeah, maybe not. Maybe because, there are. Maybe they're not.
Yeah, because I mean, the whole evolution or the origin of elves that we know of, which not necessarily has to be the only way that elves existed, was that trolls evolved into them. The dark trolls evolved into the night elves proximity of being close to an open wound of a titan.
Yeah, well, for all we know, therefore, you got a bunch of trolls who got on a boat and went to this new land, and oops, there's a giant Azerite pillar there, because we know that Azerite just comes out of the whole planet whenever it's hurt. So there's a giant Azerite pillar, and some trolls got exposed to it, and boom, now we have different kinds of elves.
Or we go back to, this was an old question, maybe asked like 8 episodes ago, and I can't remember the name, I apologize, but you asked about half races, like mixed races of like in WoW, and why we don't see any when we know that it can happen because we've seen it happen with elves and humans, et cetera, et cetera. What if this is that in between where it's not necessarily half races, but an evolutionary split that is different than what happened on the mainland, and I'm air quoting mainland, because of the proximity to those various forces? What if proximity to other forces or other phenomena shifted things so that you don't have trolls or elves anymore, but you have something that's in between? You have thinner, lighter, trolls that have the features of elves and maybe 4 fingers instead of 3 or whatever the case is. That might be toes. I forgot.
I think it's toes.
Yeah. But they, you know, they have, you know, slightly more humanoid feet. They can actually wear shoes. Go figure. But, or maybe you have dwarves that are, you know, maybe a little bit taller, or maybe, intermixed with some of the Vicruel off thing. So you don't really have like humans or dwarves. You have something in between.
I was going to point out something else that interests me.
Go for it.
That you could possibly work with this. This is blue skying. And I think I've mentioned it before, but when Draenor turned into Outland, Ner'zhul was trying to keep, kept opening portals to try and get the orcs out. What if he opened a portal and a bunch of orcs did run through it, and they ended up on one of those other continents, and they've been living there ever since? And
there's our pumpkin farmers.
They're close enough to one of these other groups, like, you know, so that maybe they hooked, maybe they met up with a bunch of Vrykul. And the Vrykul are like, you know, we like the cut of your jib. So they ended up as part of these Vrykul clans. So are these like these giant like Vrykul orc communities, and they have, you know, half orc, half Vrykul children who've kind of they just look like Vrykul, but with like, you know, big tusks.
Yeah.
And you don't, you know, and for that matter, like the ogres could have got their own way out, because we keep thinking of that the ogres are just the ogres we've seen from the Warcraft games, the original 3 RTS. But we now know there was also a magically sophisticated ogre empire, the Dorian Empire. Dorian, right? Is it Dorian? I can't remember the name.
I think that's right.
But there's that big ogre empire. What if they managed to port some people over?
Gorian,
yes.
Yes.
Dorian. So there's this Gorian Empire. What if some of them showed up and now they're fighting with the Vrykul, and they have this whole, like, you know, total rivalry thing happening, but it's not like they hate each other because they've got like some deep-seated entity. They're both fighting over land.
Yeah. So you have like this like magically attuned society of the ogres battling against the Vrykul, which are warriors and shaman. Like, that writes itself. You have warriors and arcane wielders versus warriors and spiritual wielders. Like,
and plus you can make it so for once the ogres, who you always consider like, you know, this savage race, are the civilized one. They have this like weird empire with like this sort of almost Roman oversheen.
Versus, I was just thinking the same thing. Rifle. Yeah, like, I was thinking the same thing. Like, you have them coming in and they're like, we just want to build aqueducts. We need to be able to get water from here to where the farmland is so that we can sustain our people. And and they keep killing our scaffolding and taking our livestock. Like, what are they doing? Like, we're not bothering them. Or like, you could play with it. You could have.
Yeah.
That's the joy of it.
We offered them peace. We said, look, we understand this is a different world and we're new to it. Just let us tap the water. And they're all like, you know, no, the spirit of the water tells me no. Like, I mean, it's water. I just drink it. I don't talk to it.
And then they sent these real, like, tiny ones in that had, like, these really sharp sticks and, like, these mechs that, like, they started throwing things at us. I don't understand what that's all about. And then all of a sudden you hear the battle cry, and over the ridge comes, like, an army of, like, battle-clad gnomes and, like, steam armor.
Yeah, you could totally have the gnomes and the orcs immediately get along because they're both the smartest and smallest of their various peoples. Yep. So, yeah, you have that. I keep bringing that up, but I'm telling you, man, orcs, the gnomes
orcs,
of Draenor.
Orcs are the gnomes of Draenor.
Yeah, so you could totally have, like, all these different things. But it's still the stuff that makes Warcraft fun. It's just in different concentrations. It's like you mess around with, like, you know, the formula to some degree. And I think Joe has wanted playable Tuskar for about as long as I've wanted playable Vrykul.
Northrend.
Yeah. I think we both wanted that from the moment that stuff started up. But one of the things that I get that World of Warcraft doesn't want to just have constantly new playable races. I understand this, but it's wrong. And it's time to abandon it. It's time to just throw as many playable races at us to see what people want to play. And I think this kind of thing could be a really good time, because imagine the Alliance Horde show up at this place, and instead of, like, trying to take it over or, immediately throwing their weight around, because there are big, powerful nations here that have their own stuff going on. They just want to establish, like, who can we trade with? Who can we get along with? We don't want colonies here. This isn't a colonization expansion. We're not going to just take over and build our settlements. We want to integrate with what you've got. And that would be like, you get members of these races, not necessarily joining the Alliance of the Horde, but traveling to the old continent. They want to see it.
Well, think about
they want to see what's happened. As far as they were concerned, there was nothing up there. Now suddenly you've told us there are multiple nations up there. We'd love to go explore that.
And think about it this way too, right? Like, we have the Kul Tirans now and the Zoldazar, or the Zandalari.
Zandalar, yeah.
That are part of this again, and they have been known to have, powerful navies, both of them at this point. So instead of having them, like, be agents of war, they start securing trade routes. They start making sure that these far off lands can start trading in peace, or at least with some form of semblance of, like, peace of mind with our countries or our peoples.
Yeah. And if those people get aggressive, the Zandalari and the Kul Tirans are, of course, going to be looking at defense.
Of course.
So in a way, contacting this new land could be an example of the next step in this whole Alliance Horde thing, where at some point we're supposed to go up the space together with a really old Anduin and, like, fight something together. If you view that as a possible future, one of the ways you could show it happening is to show how they deal with societies as powerful as their own.
Exactly.
Like, if the Alliance and Horde can't, they don't just go to a new land and it's like when we went to Pandaria, there was no nation in Pandaria that could actually stop us. There was no national organization there.
No, because everything had been scattered, or everything had been in little villages. It was very, very decentralized. There was no emperor anymore. There was no Mogu really in charge of anything anymore. Like, everything was just kind of on its own. So there was nothing to stand against us. Even the Shadowpan, as powerful as they were.
Like, they were scattered and disorganized.
They were scattered.
Living in monasteries.
Yeah. So, I mean, like...
So, yeah, I think we're on the same page here, in that it would be interesting to see what do the Alliance and the Horde do when they can't just overthrow everything or just set up shop. You go to a land, like we've seen it in the Dragon Isles. The Alliance and Horde, when they go to the Dragon Isles, you don't go there as a member of the Alliance or the Horde. You go there as yourself, and there's a government. There's a nation to this. I mean, it's a dragon empire, but you don't go and just start, like, building towns.
Well, and think about it this way too. Like, you can start doing some really cool stuff. Like, I'm sorry, this is probably gonna be the whole episode. I know you at home, you're probably loving every second of this, and I'm loving it right now too. But think about that dynamic. You're talking about the most powerful thing. I think it'd be really cool to have somebody like, I don't know, one of the Kirin Tor show up, one of the most powerful, like, magic organizations, or maybe someone from the Silver Covenant or something like that, and, like, try to do something where, like, well, I'll just do this. And somebody goes, no, we don't do that here, and just shut them down without batting an eye or breaking a sweat. And watching the panic across their face, or, like, them trying to come to this realization that, wait a minute, what? I can literally move a magical city. I can, you know, call upon the light or, you know, do all those wonderful powers. And you just said no, and it just didn't happen. What is going on here? And
so look, we've actually had a civilization for 10,000 years while we thought you all blew yourselves up. We have rules, and we have set those rules into the world around us. You don't just come in here and start opening portals. We've made sure you can't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and it's not like we don't, it's not like the concept of portal opening is a surprise to us. We know they exist, but we deliberately set up a system to prevent them from just happening.
Yeah. Going back to the whole Gul'dan thing, or going back to the Nerzul thing, at one point in time, one showed up here and it killed an entire town because it just sucked all the life force out of it. So we had to deal with it. So we figured out how to deal with it, and we shut it down so that it just, it could never happen again.
Like, we haven't been sitting around here doing nothing while you guys rebuilt. We've actually been doing our own stuff, thank you. And that's one of the things I would love to see, is you go to a new place and it has its own rules and its own powers. And
that's why none of the expedition forces that were sent by Odin ever came back, because they got there and their tricks didn't work, and then they were just offered a place to stay. Because it's like, you could fight us. The little ones are going to take your ankles off, and that's going to be real bad for you. And your light magic and stuff like that, those little Titan devices ain't going to work. But you can go, you know, grab a hoe and you know, go tend the field.
Or, you know, maybe when they got there. You know, the one of the things about that whole stuff is when they're doing the whole thing about it. One of the things I love is the basic, all we found is some wreckage. Maybe they got there, like one of them got there and fought. The next one that got there didn't fight.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even a question of none of your stuff is going to work. It's just like, what is the point of fighting for what Odin wants? And they actually talked them out of it. And then the next group showed up, and the second group was there going, guys, we know exactly what you're thinking because we were thinking it too, but there is no purpose to bringing these people back. They're, mm-hmm. they're doing something useful here. Maybe we don't agree with it, but at best, you will be killing a bunch of people who have the best interests of this world at heart. Do you want to do that? And that's how you ended up with, like, these people started their own civilization. Maybe along the way, like, the other thing too is that this is a pretty long trip, right?
Yep.
Like, you're going to the other side of the planet. Maybe along the way, the curse of flesh started in on them.
Mm.
So by the time you get there, you're already starting to, like, not be made out of copper anymore. And the people there are a little further along. And they say, look, you're afraid of what's happening to you, but you don't have to be. This is part of this world. It isn't some curse. It's just what we are meant to do. Because when you go to Uldumon, of all places, way back in the original game, way back in original World of Warcraft, 2004 to 2006, when you go to Uldumon, that's exactly what they tell you. And they tell you that in Uldumon, the place where Loken didn't have any control. The Discs of Norgannon that were not the ones Loken had edited tell you that the beings created by the Titans on this world eventually acclimate to the world and aren't made out of rock and metal anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, but we don't Odin never told us that. And Odin didn't ever tell them that. Odin never told anybody that. Odin kept a lot of secrets.
Well, yeah. I mean, think about how intoxicating that would be too, to like show up and have where like nobody's just keeping secrets, nobody's hiding like everything close to the chest. They're just talk about this stuff openly.
Yeah, and that matter, they're like, you know, we have a purpose here on this world as part of it. Not the biggest problem that the Titan Forged had that Tyr recognized, but that Odin refused to recognize, was that they weren't part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they weren't part of it was because they weren't letting themselves be part of it. I really feel like looking at the Mogu response is exactly the wrong response. And the reason I know that is because it's the first thing Deathwing does when he tries to subvert the Tolvir, is he tries to do what the Mogu did and turn them back into stone. Why does he do that? Why does he turn the Tolvir to stone? Is it just because stone is stronger and better they're able to fight? No. Stone beings are easier to manipulate. Look at what we're seeing in Dragonflight. with all this stuff that's going on with Tyr and the recreation of his form and the original reason that Galakrond went bad. And we know we're going to see more about Galakrond coming up in another patch, because we know the mega dungeon's coming and Galakrond gets mentioned, at least, if he doesn't actually appear in it. There's all this stuff, and over again we see that the way forward is to evolve, not to stagnate, not to go back. And I feel like I'm taking the thing we're talking about in terms of what we want to see in the narrative, and I'm kind of trying to make it the narrative. But at the same time, that's what you're talking about when you talk about people breaking away from Odin's world set. Odin wants everyone to just keep doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that with his reaction to the dragon flights. He doesn't want the dragons to change into this new thing. He doesn't want the dragons to use the Titan's power in a way that he doesn't think is the right way to do it. And he doesn't want to listen to Tyr, who is the one saying, we have to integrate with this world. We have to be part of this world to defend it. If we can't, if we're not part of it, we don't have any stakes. And if we don't have any stakes, we won't react in time. That's the problem. That's been the biggest flaw in our interactions with this world. And that's what I think would be great to see in Avaloran, is a society built upon people who realize whether or not we come here from here originally, this is where we are now. We are part of this. And that's why I think it would be great to have orcs show up and ogres show up and have them just be part of the world. Like, the people of Avaloran will certainly fight them over things, but they accept immediately that, yes, you're here, you're part of this world now. You know, living things are alive, and whether or not you're originally from Azeroth is meaningless. You know, you're here. And what am I supposed to do? Wipe you out? That's you know, I'm not going to commit genocide on you. And that could be like a whole part of the Avaloran story, is this acceptance of the diaspora communities there that are there, because they're all diaspora communities. The whole place is built upon people who came from somewhere else. You know, I really do feel like there's a lot of cool Warcraft stories you could do with this.
Yeah, and I think that's really what makes it so intriguing, because like it's the war between the races never happened. What if we weren't pitted against each other for so long? How that would have shaken up, because, and Matt and I've talked about this before, like the orcs and humans is really one of the best examples of it. Orcs are really good at doing a lot of things that the humans are not. And the humans, conversely, are good at a lot of things that the orcs are not. If they had not gone to war immediately, had the Horde 1.0 not shown up and just tried to take everything, and they would have sent diplomats to say, our planet's dying, we got a bunch of stuff we can do, here's what we can offer. Can we, you know, live in your backyard for a while? You know, what would have happened if there was collaboration instead of antagonistic relationships between the two?
Yeah. And what if the humans could have done with the orcs what they did with the night elves?
Yep.
I mean, the night elves are just as aggressive and just as good at some things that humans are not, and vice versa. But because they'd had enough time to build up a relationship, they managed to do something different. They didn't fight. Like, the Night Elves didn't invade Stormwind, and the humans didn't attack them. Whereas, and there's the thing about this is, we keep, like, people talk about orcs like they're mindless. And maybe they are in other settings. We've done a big talk about orcs before. Orcs in Warcraft are people. They're a people, but they're also individually people. You can get someone like Gul'dan, who is just about the worst guy ever, but then you can also get a Thrall, who is self-sacrificing to the point where he doesn't even know who he is anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has spent so much of his life not being around his own people, but then when he got into a position of authority amongst his people, he began giving of himself before he even knew who he was. And that's like the tragedy of that character. And that's why I hate it when people don't really deal with Thrall as the complex character he is.
He is a lot more complex than people give him credit for.
That's why I was so sad they killed off Garrosh, because I thought like Garrosh and Thrall had this astonishing, sometimes antagonistic, sometimes outright enemies relationship that would have been so good to work on in the future.
Can I just go ahead and take a side trip here and talk about how disappointed I am in Shadowlands and the fact that we did not get to have that uncomfortable conversation between Garrosh and Thrall?
You can talk about anything you want, man. It's your show. It's my show too, but you know.
I wish we would have gotten that. Ugh.
No, you're totally right. And this goes back into, there are always going to be missed opportunities, nobody is ever perfect in storytelling.
No.
This doesn't make them a bad storyteller. One of the things I hate most, I hate this relation, this reaction people have. Oh, this is garbage. This is awful. If you don't like something, you're not wrong to dislike it. That doesn't mean it's bad. Things are sometimes just not what you would do or what you wanted to see. And when we're criticizing, we are absolutely never coming from that position of, oh, this is just garbage. But I do feel like it was a missed opportunity. And the problem is that they're trying to make a game where you have to put out content almost constantly. We've watched the content flow of this expansion has been nothing short of staggering, where they're putting out story every 2 months. That is a blistering pace for World of Warcraft. It is almost never been this fast. The only time it was even close to this fast was in Mists of Pandaria. And then they had a year of nothing. But this is the only time they even came close to this pace. This pace is blistering.
Mm-hmm.
And so stuff is not going to necessarily come the way you want it or the way you expect it to. And that's why talking about stuff like Avalorin is so great for us, because we have zero idea what it actually is. We have no idea what they're going to do with it. And that means you can start going, oh, wow, wouldn't it be cool if? And that's what one of my primary pleasures in doing the show is, to sit back and listen to Joe say stuff and then react to it. Like, one of the things that I've really loved about this conversation was when Joe started off, this whole thing that led us to where we are now, where, like, I think we're almost an hour in and we haven't even gotten to another question, was this idea of, what if this place is completely different?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if the thing he was just like, you know, the guy from the Kirin Tor shows up and is like, and then nothing happens for Ulf Isbin there. And it's like, what happened? There's so many possibilities for that. And it could be something as simple as, yeah, a few decades ago, these giant Gorian things showed up and started wreaking havoc. So we set up a thing where they couldn't just come popping in like that again. And it's like, it fits into Warcraft lore. Because, you know, Nurzul's over there opening portals and Draenor's ripping itself into pieces. Where did everybody go? Imagine if off the shore of Avalorin is a big island, and that island used to be Netherstorm, or, you know, what's now Netherstorm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like, it's part of the original Frostfire mountain range is now just an island floating off the coast with a bunch of Gorian ogres and on it. And the orcs there's just a lot of possibilities for this.
And it fits even more too when you start talking about like the portal thing, because what did Illidan do in the book Illidan? What did he go and find?
Yeah, the portal network for the Legion, and he sabotaged it on purpose because he knows how dangerous those things are.
But he knew it existed, and he talked about how complex and vast the network was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so you could absolutely have a society in Avalorin who are like, look, unrestrained portal use is a problem, guys. If people can just teleport an army in behind you, that's bad. You know, we need to be able to deal with this. So yeah, there's it would necessitate, if you were going to have Dalaran in this expansion, Dalaran would have to move again.
Yeah.
And that answers a question I think someone asked last month, or like even just last
week. Might have been last week.
What do you want Dalaran to do? Dalaran can come here. Boom. Dalaran flies over. And imagine if Dalaran gets there and there's another bigger flying city there that they already had.
Or Dalaran gets there and the magic that's propelling it stops.
And it falls into the water. And
it just becomes an island.
Yeah, we're floating in the water again. Okay, well, I guess we got to get everybody up from the basement because there's like open pipes. They're just letting the water in. So yeah, they have to move everybody back up. And that's why when you get to Dalaran in the new place, it's actually bigger because they had to build up around it just so all those people from the basement had to come up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you could do so many things with this. My God, we're going to go. What time is it?
We're at time.
We didn't even get to a second question.
No, we didn't. I love it. But I mean, that's the thing. Like, this is just so ripe with possibility. Like, there's so much that you can do. There's so much that you could, experiment with and explore with and make something new and fresh. Like, one of the questions we get asked, sometimes on the other podcasts, but just in general when I'm talking with people, is how do you keep Warcraft fresh for new audiences? Because let's be honest, there's not very many MMOs that have existed for as long as Warcraft has. And Warcraft has gone through a bunch of changes, both interface and story and technology. Like, everything has evolved over time. And so for me, like, then my answer is always, you keep evolving. You keep finding something that you haven't done or something that kicks everything you know on its side or on its head so that you can go ahead and have a fresh experience. We talked about this way back when Cataclysm dropped and all the new starting zones existed because everything changed and all these lands shifted and things got moved around and it wasn't quite the game that you were used to. And it felt good because, at least at the time, maybe not for everybody, but generally, it was something new. It was something...
It created excitement.
It created excitement in one way or another. And then going to other lands, like we talk about this all the time, going to, you know, the Kul'tiran Isles and going to the Broken Shore and going to Argus and going to now the Dragon Isles, those always feel like good expansions or at least create excitement because it's stuff we're not used to. And like Dragonflight's a really good example. There's a lot of things that are familiar. We're used to dealing with, you know, lava-based things. We've been dealing with that with over on Kalimdor and the Eastern Kingdoms for forever, you know, almost 19 years at this point. You know, we're used to some of that architecture. We're used to dealing with things that are wildly like overgrown and tapped into the nature realm. There's a lot of familiarity there, but it's done in a way that we hadn't maybe experienced before or seen before. And it adds a new feel to it, which makes it exciting, which breathes new life into it. So I'm all about that as the game matures and moves forward. Things like that that can continue to breathe new life into what is already established. That's how it stays relevant. And
yeah,
that's why there's so much possibility here and why Matt and I glom onto it as much as we do.
Also, I'm going to point this out. I think in some ways Shadowlands didn't quite live up to the potential that it had.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in the years to come, we're going to look back on it as an expansion that gave us a lot of things that will become pretty important to Warcraft as a story.
Yeah, I was going to say Shadowlands is turning into, and I think we talked about this before, there are seed expansions that mm-hmm. have their own story, but the payoff from them takes years of long-term storytelling for it to pay off. We saw it with Cataclysm. We saw it with Wrath of the Lich King. We even saw it with Pandaria to a certain extent. And that's one of them. That's one that I think, despite people not really liking it in the moment, I think they're going to look back on. And I think they're going to start to see some of these chains, some of these blossoms from those seeds that were planted a long time ago once we get to the point where Shadowlands was a long time ago. But I think that's it, unless there's anything else you want to add, Matt.
I mean, always, but, you know, we do have other things we have to do with our
lives. Yeah, that whole eating and doing other things.
Sleeping, interacting with our loved ones, you know.
Yeah. That stuff. But, folks, Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means that this podcast signing community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. Again, if you have any questions for this or any of our other podcasts, send those in to podcast@blizzardwatch.com or hit us up on our Discord channels. We have one set aside for the Patreon supporters. It's a way of saying thank you for supporting us, keeping the lights on. That's our Patreon queue and podcast questions channel. And if you can't support us on Patreon, we understand. You can hit us up on our Q and podcast questions channel. Specify what show it's for. And in any capacity, if you want to support this show, again, I ask that you leave a review, share us with your friends, help get our content out there. Because the more people that listen to us, the longer we get to stick around. I like sticking around. With that, folks, we'll see you next week.
More pumpkins, guys.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.